Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today we're covering a topic that's particularly close to my heart, the art of medieval cooking.
And when I say medieval cooking, I don't just mean holding meat over a flame and calling it done. This was a real science.
You can still see that today at medieval fairs. Visitors stop in front of the cooking stations and are just fascinated. Many really do expect nothing more than a campfire with a spit. And then they see all this equipment.
That's a good point. When we talk about medieval cuisine, we're talking about a period of almost 1,000 years. Early Middle Ages, High Middle Ages, Late Middle Ages. So much developed during that time.
The differences between these periods are quite striking. Early kitchens were really spartan in their setup.
A central fire in the middle of the room, the smoke somehow escaping through roof vents. Just imagine that. You're cooking and the whole room is permanently covered in soot and smoke. Your eyes are watering, you're coughing.
And yet for most people, this was everyday life for centuries. With just a few sturdy clay pots and wooden spoons, that was often all common people had.
But when you look at the kitchens of the nobility,
it's a completely different world. Elaborately decorated metal cauldrons, sophisticated roasting spits.
Kitchen equipment was a direct reflection of social status. A simple peasant had his clay pot and was grateful for it. In noble households, beautifully crafted bronze or copper cauldrons, usually tin-lined on the inside, hung over the fire.
The choice of material also had practical reasons. Iron was considered robust and retained heat longer, while copper distributed warmth more evenly. These were simply lessons learned from experience.
What's fascinating is that these differences showed not only in a material, but also in a variety. While in simple households one cauldron had to serve all purposes, noble kitchens had specialized equipment for different cooking methods.
Tripods, various pot hooks, grates for grilling, a real professional kitchen, if you will.
And then came, well, how should I put this? A kind of technological quantum leap, you might say.
You mean the chimney?
The chimney, exactly. That might sound unremarkable at first, but it completely revolutionized cooking practices. From the 12th and 13th centuries, built-in wall chimneys with proper smoke extraction spread, at least in castles and monasteries. In southern Europe, sometimes earlier, here in Germany, more from the 13th century onwards.
Just imagine. Suddenly, smoke could be directed away properly. You could finally work by the fire for longer periods without your eyes giving out.
And what's often forgotten, the fire was now against the wall, no longer in the middle of the room. This enabled completely new floor plans. Separate kitchen rooms became possible, distinct from living and sleeping areas.
At reenactment events, we try to recreate exactly that. These different cooking methods that only became possible through better fire control. Boiling, roasting, toasting, sometimes all at once at a large hearth.
What we take completely for granted today, a stove with temperature control, different cooking zones, has its roots in exactly this development. People were constantly experimenting and optimizing.
And that's exactly what makes medieval cooking so fascinating. It's not just about the food, but about innovation, social status, and people's daily lives.
In the next few minutes, we'll take a closer look at the individual utensils. The cauldron as the heart of the kitchen, roasting spits and grates, mortars and pestles.
There's so much to discover. I'm looking forward to it.
So, the cauldron. When you talk about medieval cooking, you simply can't get around the cauldron. It was truly the heart of every kitchen.
And the choice of material was anything but random. There was copper, bronze, and iron, depending on what the household could afford.
Though you have to realize, iron was significantly more valuable in the Middle Ages than it is today. Not because it was rare, there was plenty of ore, but because of the enormous effort required to produce it.
The process took 2 to 3 days. First, roasting the ore, then reducing it in bloomery furnaces at 1100 to 1200 degrees to an iron bloom. Mind you, not melting, only the slag became liquid. Then, forging and folding by hand to get the slag out. Up to 80% of the material was lost.
Bronze and copper were easier to work with. Lower melting temperature, bronze could be cast, copper was usually wrought, meaning hammered into shape. Still, anyone who owned an iron cauldron had something to show for it.
And the properties were different too. What was used for which purposes?
And as we mentioned, iron was more robust and retained heat longer, ideal for...
for long simmering. And copper offered better heat distribution.
With copper, the heat spreads more evenly across the bottom. If you needed precise temperature control, that was an advantage. But for daily cooking, where the cauldron hung over the fire for hours, iron was more practical.
What surprised me during my research, the typical household cauldrons weren't that huge. Sizes varied considerably, of course. Smaller clay cooking pots, around 2 to 5 kilograms maybe, 5 to 15 liters. Iron cauldrons were heavier, 5 to 15 kilograms, holding 10 to 30 liters.
That was enough for a family. The larger cauldrons, 20 liters and up, were found in castles or monasteries. But for normal households, mobility was important. You had to be able to take the cauldron off the hook, after all.
Speaking of hooks, the suspension system was cleverly designed too. Pot hooks with loops, height adjustable on chains. That way you could regulate the heat. Cauldron higher, less heat. Lower, more heat.
Essentially the medieval temperature control. And then, of course, there was the tripod as an alternative, particularly practical for camp situations.
So the tall tripods, not to be confused with the low trivets for the embers, which were only about 10 to 30 centimeters, were often collapsible, 50 to 100 centimeters tall. You could pack them up, transport them, set them up in minutes. Flexible and efficient.
Which brings us to perhaps the most fascinating technique, perpetual cooking.
That's something modern people can hardly imagine anymore.
Basically, the cauldron often hung over the fire for very long periods. Not just briefly while cooking, but for hours or days. In the morning, there was still soup from the day before, and new ingredients were added. Vegetables, meat scraps, bones, herbs. And this continued day after day, even when the fire was damped down at night.
Oh, and that saved fuel, of course. Once the fire was going, you didn't have to keep relighting it.
Wood and charcoal were precious. Letting a fire burn down completely and then starting a new one, that was wasteful. The long simmering cauldron made optimal use of the existing embers.
And it made sense hygienically too. The constant heat kept bacteria in check, even though they wouldn't have put it that way back then.
The stews also became quite interesting in terms of flavor. Flavors developing over days, mingling together, the result was probably far more complex than our modern quick meals.
In reenactment today, we usually work with cast iron cauldrons. They're modelled on the historical ones, but made from modern materials. More hygienic, easier to maintain.
The compromise between authenticity and practicality. A historical iron cauldron would have rust problems today that you can't deal with at events.
But the basic shape is right. Handle, suspension, the rounded design. And you cook with it just like 800 years ago.
That's the beauty of it. The technique has stood the test of time. Cauldron over fire, let it simmer slowly. That works just as well today as it did in the 12th century.
The hearth wasn't just for cooking. It was really the centre of the entire household. Warmth, light, gathering place.
Especially in the colder months, life revolved around this hearth. And cooking happened almost incidentally while people warmed themselves.
And that's exactly why the tools that made cooking possible were so important. Tripods, for example. You could place them right in the embers, pot on top, done.
That shows how well thought out the tools for fire control were.
There was the right tool for every task to make optimal use of the heat.
And then, of course, there were the roasting spits. That's a whole different chapter.
At reenactment events, you realize how labor-intensive it really is. You stand there for hours turning this spit. Steadily, not too fast, not too slow.
They were mostly made of iron, weren't they?
Iron or wood, depending. Iron was, of course, sturdier and could handle higher heat. They were placed on so-called andirons with special spit hooks. And then it was turn, turn, turn.
The meat didn't hang directly over the flame, but next to the embers. Below it, there was often a drip pan to catch the dripping fat.
And the fat was then used for basting, or wine, plus rubbing in herbs beforehand. No, wait. First rub in spices and herbs, then skewer, then baste during roasting.
The basting kept the meat juicy and added flavor. But the whole procedure really required constant attention. You couldn't just walk away.
That's why the task at the fire was often given to...
to kitchen servants, or in simpler households, actually to children. They would sit there for hours turning it.
In larger noble households from the late Middle Ages, there were even mechanical solutions. Weight-driven turnspit mechanisms, called tournebroche in French, mounted on the fireplace edge. First written mention, mid-14th century. They would turn by themselves.
But that was late Middle Ages and really only for wealthy households. Most people did it manually their entire lives.
And then there's the question, when do you use a spit, when a grate? It's not that complicated. Larger pieces of meat, whole chicken, leg, roast, those go on the spit. Smaller pieces or vegetables go on the grate.
Grates were made of iron, often with feet so you could place them directly in the embers. Practical for quick grilling in between.
It's really impressive how timeless this basic principle is. When we grill over a campfire today, we're doing essentially the same thing. Grate for sausages and vegetables, spit for the big roast.
The basic principles over 800 years have...
not changed. I find that remarkable.
What has changed are the materials. Today we work with stainless steel instead of forged iron. More hygienic, rust-free, easier to maintain.
But the hand-forged versions for reenactment look more authentic, of course. They have that certain something, those irregularities in the material.
The craftsmanship behind them is impressive. Every blacksmith made their spits slightly differently. Some had elaborate handles. Others were plain and functional.
And the turning, that's really an art. You have to feel the weight of the meat, gauge the heat,
find the right rhythm. You don't learn that in a day.
Respect for the craft is exactly the right phrase. People back then achieved remarkable results with simple tools.
Besides the large equipment, there were of course the smaller tools that no kitchen could do without. Mortars and pestles, for example.
They were absolutely essential for preparing spices. In the Middle Ages, spices weren't sold pre-ground like today. You got them whole, as seeds or dried leaves, and had to grind them yourself.
And that meant real work. Peppercorns, caraway, coriander, everything was crushed in the mortar. Some recipes required really fine pastes, so you'd stand there for quite a while.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
The mortars themselves were made from different materials. Stone was popular, especially granite. But wood and bronze were also used.
And then the wooden spoons and ladles, they were truly found in every kitchen, whether poor or rich. That's actually a fascinating aspect.
What exactly?
That the wooden spoon has barely changed over the centuries. The one in my kitchen drawer looks practically the same as one from the 13th century.
The basic form was simply perfect. Long handle, scooping bowl, heat resistant. There was nothing to improve.
For reenactment, they're often made from beech or maple. Hardwoods that don't splinter as easily. Softer woods, like linden, were used for...
For simpler spoons that wore out faster. They had to be replaced more often. But there was hardly any throwaway culture in the Middle Ages anyway.
And then, of course, knives. They were multifunctional. Not just in the kitchen, but in everyday life in general.
Everyone had their own knife that they wore on their belt. It was used for cutting at meals, for scoring or carving while working, a true all-purpose tool.
In the kitchen, there were additional larger cleavers and special blades for meat. But the personal eating knife remained the most important utensil at the table.
Which brings us to storage. Things looked, how should I put it, very different from today. The hierarchy of materials was strict.
You mean wood versus ceramics?
And pewter. Among common people, wood dominated along with simple unglazed ceramics, bowls, plates, clay jugs. Those with more money owned glazed ceramics or pewter from around the 13th century onwards. And really high quality items like imported stoneware from the Rhineland, you find those among wealthy citizens and the nobility, of course.
Wooden barrels were also
essential for storing provisions, grain, legumes, salted meat. They were made in different sizes depending on need.
And for liquids, there were clay jugs in the household. Water, beer, wine. But for storage, wooden barrels were standard. And there were also vessels made of wood, leather or pewter, depending on the use. The clay jugs kept their contents cool and were relatively airtight.
But wooden tableware had its advantages too. It was easy to make, robust enough for everyday use, and if you dropped it, it didn't break like ceramics.
The only thing you had to watch was the treatment. Raw wood absorbs liquid and becomes unhygienic. That's why it was rubbed with linseed oil or beeswax.
That makes the wood water repellent and seals the pores. A technique we use exactly the same way in reenactment.
Retreating once per season is usually enough. The oil penetrates the wood, the wax forms a protective layer on top. Then a bowl like that lasts forever.
It's really amazing that many of these everyday items have kept their basic form to this day. The wooden spoon, the bowl, the mortar, all timeless.
That shows our ancestors knew what worked.
They didn't experiment for the sake of experimenting. When something was good, it stayed that way.
Pure pragmatism. And that's what makes these objects so authentic today, because they don't seem artificially historical, but simply right.
When we talk about medieval cooking, we shouldn't forget one aspect: hygiene and safety. That was a real challenge back then.
And the solutions were surprisingly practical. For cleaning cookware, they used sand, ash, and hot water. That sounds primitive at first, but it worked.
Sand as a scouring agent is actually quite effective. The fine grains remove burnt-on residue without damaging the material. And ash has a slightly alkaline effect, essentially a natural cleaning agent.
The open hearth was, of course, a constant source of danger. Flying sparks, hot embers, flammable materials everywhere. Fire safety was a matter of survival.
In many households, there were firm rules. No loose fabrics near the fire, water buckets within reach, children only at the hearth under supervision. This was essential everyday knowledge.
For beginners in historical cooking today, there are a few basic rules that I...
that everyone really should know. Fire extinguisher within reach, even if it doesn't fit the picture.
Tie back long hair. Avoid loose sleeves or roll them up. And know your fire. The heat from an open flame is different than on a stove. Much more uneven, harder to control.
At reenactment events, there are often requirements from the organizers. Fire watches, safety distances, sometimes even fire protection mats under the hearth.
That's the right compromise. Authenticity in appearance, but modern safety behind the scenes. No one should get hurt just because we want to bring history to life.
One particularly impressive aspect of medieval cooking is the sustainability mindset. People back then wasted nothing.
You mean the perpetual cooking? The cauldron that often hung over the fire for hours?
Among other things. But beyond that too. Vegetable scraps went into the stew, bones were boiled down for broth, fat was collected and reused. Nothing ended up as waste.
That's actually something we could learn again today. This circular economy in the kitchen. Nose-to-tail cooking is trending again. People in the Middle Ages practiced it out of necessity.
And the equipment itself. A well-maintained iron cauldron lasted generations. There was no throwaway mentality.
Quite the opposite. These things were inherited, repaired, kept in use.
And that's exactly the point. Why engaging with historical cooking utensils is more than just a hobby. It's cultural preservation.
When we stand at a fire at a market and cook, we're keeping techniques alive that would otherwise be forgotten. That's living history.
And anyone can start. You don't have to set up a complete camp kitchen right away. A wooden spoon, a simple bowl, maybe a small tripod. That's enough to get started.
Medieval fairs are a good starting point. You can watch, ask questions, maybe stir the pot yourself. Most reenactors are happy when people show interest.
And if you want to go deeper, at Battle Merchant you'll find not just the equipment, but also many more topics about history and historical crafts on the blog.
It's worth checking out. We hope this episode has given you a good insight into the fascinating world of medieval cooking.
From the cauldron to the wooden spoon, all tools that make history tangible. Thanks for listening.
Until next time.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your sword sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.